Welcome to season 4 of our podcast, Nature Bounce, brought to you by Go Jauntly, a walking, wayfinding, and nature connection app available for free on the App Store and the Play Store. Nature Bounce is hosted by me, Hannah Such, co-founder and CEO at Go Jauntly. This podcast is an opportunity for us to banter and share learnings and insights with you and a series of truly inspirational people we've met on our journey. We'll talk green living, nature, walking, well-being, and more. If you like what you hear, please do rate and subscribe to the whole series. Go Jauntly is an everyday walking app designed to inspire you to walk more and get out and about in enjoying nature. Whether you stomp, roam, ramble, hike, or wander, we have unlimited walking trails for you to enjoy. You can download our free walking app and enjoy your very own pocket-sized encyclopedia of urban walks. Search Go Jauntly on your app store. On today's episode, we'll be speaking with Annabelle Adds, aka Annabelle Streets. She is a brilliant fiction and non-fiction author and all-round walking trailblazer. Annabelle's first foray into memoir and her first solo-authored non-fiction book, Windswept, Walking in the Footsteps of Remarkable Women, is a must-read and is followed up beautifully by her most recent book, 52 Ways to Walk. Please listen until the end to find out more about a chance for you to win a copy of her books. Welcome to the show, Annabelle. I am so pleased to have you here today. I'm a massive fan.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me, because I'm also a massive fan of Go Jauntly. So there you go. We are fans of one another.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Meet Your Hero Day for me anyway. I'm so pleased that you like the app. It's really important. It was made with love and with walking in mind. So knowing that a fellow walker loves it, it just brings joy to me. Helps keep me going.
Oh, good. But I love many things about it, but I love the way it's very, it feels very community-ish. Feel like an app, a great big nameless global. I feel like it's come from my place of birth. A little hope. You know what I mean?
Oh my God, I'm going to quote you on that, if that's all right. That's brilliant. So please, can you sort of share a little bit more about your background? I'm sure our listeners would love to know more.
Well, I grew up in, I grew up on the west coast of Wales, which is the part of Wales where really nobody goes, and it's sort of very empty, and people all spoke Welsh there. So I grew up learning Welsh. And my parents were, their own version of the good life, really. So we had chickens and a pig, and we grew our own vegetables. And of course, we had no car. In fact, my parents, neither of them could drive. So we walked everywhere. So really, from the minute I popped out of the womb, I was pretty much walking. Well, maybe not quite the minute, but from very early on, I was walking because we had to. Obviously, I was in a pushchair for a bit, but I was never in a car seat. I was never in a car. I was occasionally on a bus or a train. But walking is sort of in my DNA. I was homeschooled. So walking actually also was part of my education. My sister and my brother and I, every afternoon, our school, which sounds rather quaintly idyllic now, but I think I was terribly behind when I actually joined real school age 12. Every afternoon, we would go for a walk. So morning was lessons at home with my mum teaching us, and afternoon was a walk where we would spot flora and fauna, and we'd go out with our little bottle, our little handbook to the local flowers and the birds. And then we would take, if we found a lovely fern or a fossil, because we were quite close to the beach as well, we would take them home and we would draw them or write a poem about them. So it was so quite nice. A quirky education. And it just meant that, I suppose, two things, nature and walking, being on foot, were just absolutely intrinsic to my growing up. We also had to, because we didn't have a car, we also had to walk for functional reasons. So if we wanted to go and see a friend, or we wanted to go and buy something from the shop, everything was just on foot, absolutely everything. So obviously no one wore pedometers there. No one was counting their steps, but I probably was doing, 10, 12,000 steps from about the age of 5, just because we walked all the time. So, but of course, we didn't ever think of, in those days, we didn't think of it as foot count, step counting at all. It was just how you got somewhere.
It was just traveling in
It
a
was just
way, wasn't
traveling,
it? Yeah.
but because it was also bound up with going nice things, it wasn't just going to the shop to do the shopping, it was also going to the beach and walking up the valley to look for flowers and birds. It was also bound up with nice things, pleasurable, enjoyable things, so it didn't just feel like a chore. And I think that's a really good balance now for parents who want their children to grow up feeling really, really comfortable on foot. You have to make it as enjoyable as it is functional. So if it's all just functional, and kids just see it as a chore and a bore and a pain, and oh, why can't we go in the car? Then they won't ever, perhaps will never find all that joy in walking. But if you build it into adventures, sort of, and trips out and excursions, and
I like that you went sort of treasure hunting in a way, didn't you, when you were at the beach and things like that, because you'd come back with some kind of beach find treasure and then be able to go back and draw it and possibly learn more about it as well as part of your schooling.
quite often eat it. So we did a
Oh,
lot of foraging as well,
yeah, of
because
course.
my parents were very poor, so we would be looking for fungus that we could eat, or we'd find crabs and lobsters on the beach that we could eat. So walking was just tied up with absolutely everything, which I think is probably exactly how our ancestors lived.
Yes.
Walking was just bound up with life, whereas now they've sort of become dissociated, haven't they?
Yeah, very much
The fact
so.
that it's exercise, or it's hiking. It's hiking to keep fit, or but in the past, it was just part of life, and they were inextricably linked.
Yeah, so true. You just remind me of like a conversation I was having recently in a kind of steering committee type situation in the public sector, and they kept referring to walking as leisure walking as a description to differentiate against the sort of practical journeys that you talked about. And for me, I don't like describing Go Jaunty as a leisure walking app because it's much more than that. I feel like it's almost like breathing. It's kind of like
Yes.
essential. You just do
Eating,
it.
sleeping, breathing. Exactly. Isn't that strange? I know. And this idea of functional walking, which is walking, to get to the hairdresser or the dentist or whatever. I mean, there it's just walking, isn't it?
I think the
Especially with all
difference
different
for,
types of eating.
yeah, that's true. I guess now I've said that it's like breathing. You have slow breathing and you have
Yeah.
fast breathing. I'm like, oh, I'm going to start really
I was just
overanalyzing
thinking
it
that as well, actually. I was thinking,
now.
actually, you do get different types of breathing, don't you?
I guess what we're sort of saying here is that it's kind of almost, at least from our perspective, something essential to living. And there are different types of walking. You can walk briskly, you can walk
Yeah.
slowly, and you can walk with purpose, but it's almost just part of your, at least for us anyway, we've just built it into our everyday life, and that's why it's part of our DNA now. And I really like making the most of those functional journeys that you talked about. So because I live a busy life and I've got a young kid and I'm working, I'm chained to my desk, I really like going the scenic route to the station or going the scenic route to the co-op, because for me that's me time, and like I'm trying to make the most of those sort of like moments, if you will.
Yes, and in fact, I always think the ideal perfect walk is one where you do perhaps get your heartbeat up a bit, so you're going a bit faster. You do perhaps stop and look at the architecture or a bird. You do perhaps pick up a bit of dandelion to put in your salad, perhaps not on the London streets. You do perhaps have a few meditative moments by the river. It's where you And you do also get to the dentist on time, or to your the school on time, or whatever. But it's all of those things rolled into one, and that's how walking should be, really,
Yeah,
in an
I really
ideal world.
agree. I
And
really agree.
all a bit of adventure, and there's a romance to it all.
Yeah, I think for me, especially after the kind of the science that shows if you notice the good things in nature, it's really good for you. Like I really, and sometimes when I'm in a mood, even when I'm like grumpy walking and I'm like, oh, someone's really annoyed me, I'm going to stomp my way, I will naturally just like listen and hear like a bird song, or see like the daffodils are sprouting in London, and I'm like, and I just try and tune into that, and it's even Even if it's just, it's not even for a minute, it's like 30
Yeah.
seconds of, oh my God,
Yeah.
that's beautiful. It's like those moments that I have to make the most of because I simply don't have time to do 4 hour leisure walks and things like that. So I think it's a really important skill. And potentially people don't really know about it. They don't know that they can do it or they're not conscious of it anyway.
Yeah, that's right. So also I love the idea. I've always loved the idea of meditation, but I actually hate just sitting in one place. So when I learned, for example, that I could do a walking meditation, that was so perfect for me because I thought, and now I can meditate and I can move. But in fact, one of the things I did, I'll come on to it later. One of the things I did when I sort of decided to completely overturn my life and make it into a walking life was I just thought about every single thing I was doing during the day. And I thought, let's see if I can do that walking. So my book group, I said, right, we're not going to sit around having supper and, a glass of wine. We're going to have a walking book group. So I tried that. I bought myself a walking desk. So quite often I work while I'm walking. So everything I was doing, I thought, let's see if I can do it on foot. And an awful lot of things. A very simple thing is, meeting a friend for a coffee. Always now on foot. So a lot of the things that we're already doing could actually be doing while you're walking.
Feels like you've just said something really groundbreaking, but actually it's really simple. And it's just something, it's just like flipping it. Cause there's so many times when I'm like, oh, should we go for a coffee? We'll sit down and have a coffee. But why the hell am I not taking my keep cup with me and going for a walk?
That's right. That's right. Take your little cup and get your coffee, and then walk and talk.
Yeah, it makes so much sense. And I can't believe even me hasn't thought of that. But it's like sometimes it's just the new perspective as well, isn't it? Of just like seeing a different vantage point, speaking to someone else and learning simple tips and tricks on like how to get more walking in your life. I would love to know more about your walking meditation tips because it's definitely not something that I have been able to do yet. I think the closest I've got was one summer evening walking home, and I'd had a really terrible day, and I took my shoes off and just like walked along the mud, on like on the grass, and I was like, oh my God, this feels amazing. And I think that's possibly the closest I've got. Like, what are your tips for walking meditation?
Well, there's a special sort of technique for walking meditation, which is all about it's really all about your breathing, so that you're walking and in sort of step with your each in pace or in step with your pace or in pace with your step, you breathe in and out and you breathe to a count. So it's just as you would if you were sitting there meditating and you're just focusing on your breath. But when you do a walking meditation, you're focusing and on your breath and making sure that your breath is aligned to your pace. So you're
Right.
just you're and it's generally quite slow, and generally you would do it on your own, possibly not with your child or with a dog.
Come on. Yeah, fair enough.
It's actually definitely a walk that you would do on your own, and it's really just where you're really focused not only on your breathing but also on being sort of very present in your body in the moment. And just exactly as you would if you were doing a sitting meditation, just letting thoughts come along and then just letting them float off rather than then sort of grappling with them or ruminating on them. So to all extents and purposes, it's pretty much the same as meditation, but you are moving and the breath is in time with the step. And that's really what your mind is focusing on the breathing, but also on the pacing. And
Is there
coordinating them.
a sort of optimum amount of time to do that for? Because you mentioned like not with your dog or with your kid, and I'm mostly walking with my dog or my kid. So is it like, could you do it for sort of 5 minutes whilst your son or daughter was like off kicking a football, or do you need to sort of do it for a lot longer, do you think?
No, I think 5 minutes is fine. I think 3 minutes is fine. In
Ooh.
the same way as guided meditations will sometimes say, whatever you can manage, 3 minutes is fine. And 3 minutes is sufficient for you to just start to, to relax really. With the walking though, I do actually follow a sort of a breathing pattern, which I call a 3-1. So it's a intake of three breaths, which I do as I step. So it's a breathe in over a count of three, one, two, three. So that's your in breath. Hold for one, which also is another step. And then you breathe out for three, just little three outbursts, which is your exhale, and you hold for one. And so during that time, so you've got three in breaths and a hold and three out breaths and a hold. So that's eight breaths. And you will have, during that time, you will have done eight steps. Does that make sense? It's quite hard to explain. You sort of need to sort of demonstrate.
You need to demonstrate it. Yeah, we need to make a little video. Actually, you need to make a reel on your lovely Instagram and show people how to do it, because it sounds like something that I need to try. And I think the one time where I feel like I did it was that time, because I was walking really slowly on the grass because I was trying to make sure I didn't step on dog poo or grass or anything else that you find in a London park. And so I was like inadvertently doing it. I think I was like carrying my shoes. It's like the golden hour. And I was just plodding along, looking at the ground. And, you know, like, so yeah, I need to do it more often. It sounds amazing. You've converted me in the fact that I can do it with my son and my dog around. That sounds good.
Well, try it. And I think also the other thing I would say is to experiment with the breathing and the pacing. So just play around with it and find what suits you, and you know, what that preferred paced breathing step is for yourself.
Yeah, great. Thank you. I'm hoping all of our listeners will try it out and let us know how they get on as well, because it definitely feels like a bit of a new thing for me to try. You've done, you know, your background, you've spoken a little bit about, and your connection with the natural world, but actually, you know, you're a famous award-winning author, journalist, and all sorts of other kind of skills that you have, like, on your journey. And I know you've written about a lot of amazing women who walk, but like along your journey, like who's inspired you the most, and what is it about those people that have inspired you, I guess? Sorry, that was a bit of a long-winded way of saying that.
No, that's a great question. There are three women who've, there are lots of women who've inspired me, but there are three who stand out because they walked in really different ways. And I love it when I find a woman who walks in a way that I can learn from. So I'll probably start with Nan Shepherd, who was a Scottish walker, which was a teacher, actually, a teacher and a writer, but walking was her great passion, hill walking in Scotland. And she walks in a really embodied way. So she would often walk barefoot. So she's all about not walking quickly, not trying to climb the highest hill she can climb. She's just about feeling, and I think of it as embodied walking. So she's about really walking in your body. So she will do all sorts of things like go barefoot. And she writes about, walking barefoot in rain, walking barefoot in heat. You know, she describes what it's like to feel different types of earth under her feet, but she does it in this amazing detail so that she really makes you want to go and try it. She talks about walking at night. She talks about walking in the rain. She talks about what it feels like. She talks about the feeling of your lungs pumping when you're walking uphill. So in great, great detail, she will talk about these tiny little physiological changes that I think most of us, when we walk, we don't even think about them. We certainly don't pause and reflect on them. But she makes you think about the way in which you're walking. She touches everything. She tastes everything. So she will, you know, she's passing a tree. She will touch the bark of the tree and she will describe the sensation in her fingertips in such a way that, because we can all do this. There's absolutely nothing exclusive about it. Anyone can go for a walk and touch a tree, but she makes you want to do it. And she makes you live through your fingertips on that bark. It was quite interesting because I've read lots and lots of books about walking by men, and no man that I'd ever come across had ever talked about walking in that really, really sort of sensual, physical way. And right down to what it feels like in your little toe and what it feels like, what the wind feels like on the back of your neck, what it feels like to wake up and have a little bird crawling up your arm. What it's like to, you know, pick up an insect. So it's just so detailed and so exquisitely beautiful that she, you know, you read her and you think, I want to walk like she does. But she's slow and embodied. I've got two other favourites. Another one is Simone de Beauvoir, who was a French philosopher, and she's most famous for you know, hanging out in Parisian cafes with Jean-Paul Sartre and talking about, you know, being a nothingness. But actually, she was a really mad keen hiker. And not from childhood. She had a relatively comfortable childhood. It was only when she started, she was a teacher as well. She started teaching in about 1929 in a French school in the south of France. So she didn't know anyone there. So she decided that on her 2 days off, she would just go walking. She didn't know what else to do. So she started going for, you know, first of all, she'd start with a shorter walk. And then each week her walks got longer and longer. And then she just became obsessed with walking and really pushing herself physically. And what I loved about her was that, unlike Nan Shepherd, she was really always testing her body. She was always thinking, all right, how fast can I walk? How high can I climb? How quickly can I walk this particular stretch? Wow. How much can I carry? How many hours can I walk? So she was very much about testing her body. And I know we take this for granted now, but back in 1929, you know, girls didn't walk like that. That was really, you know, a very male way of walking, you know, military male. But she just wanted to see what her body was capable of. And I really loved she has a lot of things, like she'll come to a ravine and she will try and jump over it. And she doesn't always manage it. Sometimes she falls and she'll slip. And she writes about all of this, what it's like then to fall down and to have your backpack rolling down a mountain. But she was, her attitude, which is, you know, I'm going to give it a go. I'm going to see if I can do what all the boys do. So I really loved that about her. And then my third favorite is a woman called Clara Vivian, who wrote about 20 travel books. They're all out of print and no one really knows who she is now. But what I love about her is that she just carried on walking literally until she died. So she walked for 3 months from Switzerland all the way to the south of France when she was in her 60s. She repeated that walk when she was 78. And then she went to live in Cornwall. And right up until her death, I think she died when she was 90, she was still walking the lanes of Cornwall to the very last day. And what I like about that is I think that, you know, we can all do that. You start and then you just keep going. And that gave her so much freedom. As a 90-year-old, she could still go out and walk all day along these Cornish lanes. And I just, I'm obviously nowhere near 90, but I like the idea that, you know, I could get to 90. And if I did, I could still be doing these, you know, really liberating walks. So those are my three big walking heroes, I shall call them.
Yeah, no, they all sound amazing. Like Simone de Beauvoir, just like basically like a test of her own strength, mental and physical, probably, because I know I'm rubbish. Like if I see a hill, I'll be like, oh, let's go back the way we came. Even though I know at the top, there's probably going to be an incredible view. And I think it's a sort of a mental wall sort of barrier thing. And I love that she's like pushing through that. And then like walking is so good for you physically, mentally. It's no wonder that Clara's like was still walking at 93 and was still around at 93, but probably because of all the walking that she did. And yes. Must have been good for her mental faculties as well, because that's the thing, isn't it? Like if you're older and you don't get out as much, things like loneliness and isolation can sort of creep in, and actually walking can help with that as well.
It's funny actually, because those three women, none of them, Clara was married for a bit, but most of them spent most of their lives as single women. And the great thing about walking, as you say, is that if you don't need someone to go with you, you can just step out of your front door and go for a walk on your own. And as soon as you're out, especially if you're doing an urban walk, as soon as you're out, you're smiling at people, you're saying hello to people, you're passing people. So none of them were ever lonely, because they all knew that they had that physical capability. They could just go outside and there would be people around them.
Yeah, it really does lift your spirits, I think. And I know lockdown was a while ago now, but, you know, even just those, catching someone's eye as you're walking. Like this morning, I said good morning to the builder up the road. And like, that was probably quite nice. He smiled, mm-hmm. I smiled, and like, we're richer for it, probably, even though it was just a sort of micro moment. And I definitely think there's something to be said about feeling more connected to your community and to your local area by just getting out on foot.
Yeah,
And
well,
like,
you just see your neighbours, don't you? You see the person that works in the shop at the end of the road. Whereas if you just do that 2 steps, you know, from your front door into your car, you don't really see anyone, and then you're sitting in your car and you're completely isolated until you get out and, you know, make those 2 steps into your office or wherever you're going.
And the only experience, the connection, I guess you might get is road rage.
Yes.
It's
Well,
like
because you'd never smile at another. I mean, it just wouldn't happen, would it?
it
You'd
just
never smile at
wouldn't
another or wave at another driver.
go.
But out on the street, you know, and in the country, everyone says good morning, good afternoon. That just seems to be completely normal. Everyone says hello. But I find that in London, I find it much more in the mornings, actually. People smile and say hello or good morning, or just smile. Or as you say, just sometimes it just catch your eye, and it's just that moment of connection. And it's enough, isn't it? It's often just enough to get your spirits up.
I think so, definitely. I'm with you on that.
Hi, Shane here with a walk tip. Why not explore the towns and villages of East Suffolk with our new walk collection created in partnership with East Suffolk Council? You can go shop hopping in Woodbridge, explore the seaside in Attleburgh, or notice nature in Halesworth. Why not try to complete all the routes and see more of this beautiful corner of England? Check out the routes in-app now. With the new year comes a new challenge. Join the Walk 2023 Challenge in-app now and try to walk 2,023 kilometers in a year or less. It's about an hour of walking or 5.5 kilometers a day. I myself have missed a few days already, so I have some catching up to do this weekend. Fortunately, there are a bunch of lovely new Gojauntlie routes I've been meaning to check out, so this is the perfect opportunity.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your latest book?
So when I wrote Windswept, there was a lot more science in it. So there was a lot of, you know, what happens to us physiologically, you know, what hormones are shifting around when we are walking first thing in the morning, or when we are walking in the dark. All of that. It was a lot of science in it. It was probably about twice the size. And my editor, she looked at it and said, "Oh, there's just too much science in here, Annabelle. You've got to strip it all out. It's too much." She was right. So all the science came out, or a lot of the science, this is still a little bit there, and a lot of the science came out, and I sat there with this great pile of papers in front of me, and I thought, I think there's another book there. So I just rang up my agent and said, "Look, you know, I've taken all this science out, and I think there's really good material there." And I was quite attached to a lot of the material. So that's when I decided that I was going to put it into a book and call it 52 Ways to Walk, because I actually had 53, but of course there are 52 weeks in a year, so one had to go. And
Now I
really,
want to know number 53. That's exclusive.
more have popped, well, I said more have popped up in my mind, obviously, since then, because new research has come out. So it's based, each week is based on a few studies that show what happens when we walk barefoot, or when we walk as meditation, or when we walk a dog, or it's quite a lot about weather. So what happens when we walk in the rain, what happens when we walk in cold, what happens when we walk in wind, because all of these actually change us. So walking in rain, as anyone will tell you, is a completely different experience, but it also has completely different effects on our body. You know, the smells that we breathe in after it's been raining, or as it's raining, are completely different, and they open up all these neural pathways in our brain. So one of the things that happened after I'd, you know, written this book, or as I was researching it really, was I just discovered that really we're just designed, we are designed, we're designed to be outside all the time. So originally we evolved to be out in the rain, in the snow, in the heat, you know, at night, you know, all of the time. That we're designed to be out there, not really indoors sitting on our backsides. So that's probably why each different version of walking and each different type of climate or temperature or weather condition sort of affects us in a completely different way. But I think that we don't think about that anymore. And in fact, I think generally, certainly in this country, we've sort of evolved now into creatures that only really come out on a sunny day in the light. But our ancestors were walking, you know, walking in the dark, all year round. They were walking when they were hungry. So a lot of the excuses that my children were always coming up with, you know, I actually found a reason to throw back every excuse. Their excuses were like, oh, you know, it's too late, I'm too hungry. They're just whatever it was. I said, oh no, hungry, that's really good. Walking when you're hungry, that's very, very good for you. So it did turn out there's all these extraordinary studies. And the other thing I found was, because these studies are often about walking, which is, I think, you know, it's not really a sexy hot topic, a lot of them don't get covered in the national press.
So interesting.
So they were all sitting in these medical school archives, in these universities, and no one knew about them.
Oh my God.
So anyway, they're all in, or a lot of them are now in 52 Ways to Walk. But obviously since then, new research has come out. So I feel like I've got a few chapters to add.
You might have a second book by, you know, give it a couple more years and you'll have 52 other ways to walk or something.
So one of the studies that came out recently, which I would have put in here because it definitely deserved a chapter, was, you know, a whole study looking at what happens to our body when we walk with poles, you know, just walking with two poles. Or, you know, of course, our ancestors just walked with sticks. But again, it's the same sort of thing. And that was, again, really interesting about how you use completely different parts of your body, how you move more quickly when you've got a pole, even though you don't notice it. Walking feels more effortless with walking poles. And again, you know, a lot of people, when I talked about this, a lot of people said to me, oh, I thought poles were just for old people, or I thought poles were just for, you know, going on a really, really long 20-mile hike. But actually, poles are for all of us, whether we're in the city, whether we're young, whether we're old, wherever we are. They will help us, particularly if you're trying to get more sort of bang for your buck and less injury.
Yeah,
they're really, really good. Or if you're older and you need balance, poles are fantastic. But anyway, yeah. There's no chapter on poles, because poles came out, that research came out too late.
but that's okay, because we can read your book for all of the others, and now we have number 53. So yes. It's a win-win. I'm so ignorant when I first started out walking, because my husband, who's a big walker, and his family, they lived in like the fields of Northumberland. On the walk, they'd like pick up a stick and use it as a walking stick, and I'm like, why are they using a stick as a walking stick? They don't use one in the city. But actually, it's really helpful for balance and grip and pace. Yes. And so now me and my son are like, get us a stick. And like, they're not proper ones, but it's almost part of the fun in a way, like hunting for the right walking stick to accompany you on your woodland walk.
Yes. Yeah. And then my kids always used to love finding a proper stick. In fact, my son has whittled me a really beautiful stick, which he whittled with his penknife for one of my birthdays. And I use it all the time when I do quite a lot of night walks. Not in London. I don't like night walking in cities, but in the country I do quite a lot. I'll go out at the full moon. Yesterday I went out at about 4 a.m. But I always take my stick, and it's not because you know there are any wild beasts or strange men lurking around, because there's nothing there, no one's out at that time. But so there's something about holding the stick. I just feel more comfortable. I just feel more confident, and it's just really nice to hold my stick.
I guess it helps when it's dark as well, in a little bit. It gives you like that extra, it's like an extra hand, isn't it, as you're like clambering over things. But I also love that your son whittled you a stick. What a legend.
I know.
It's so sweet.
One of my favorite things. Yeah.
Oh.
My name on it.
Oh my God, that's so lovely. Please, can you like post a picture of you with your stick on your Instagram? Sorry, I'm like asking for so much. I'm asking
Actually,
for so much
really good idea.
More I've content.
Never, I've never revealed my whittled stick. I might do a big reveal of the whittled stick.
Yeah, that would be really lovely.
I'd be really embarrassed.
So what makes a good walk for you? You've talked a little bit about night walking being amazing, but what else? What other tips have you got?
Well, I always would recommend finding some water. I really love to have water somewhere on the walk. So that might be a river, it might be a canal, it might be the coast, it might be a lake, it might be a fountain. But there's just something about coming across, I mean, it could even be a large puddle. And you will know, because you walk with a small child, but they love to walk through a puddle. It's just something about water. Just looking at it, I find it really meditative. And again, interestingly, it goes back to our, you know, our distant ancestral self, when if we saw water, it meant that we would survive, we would live, because where there was water, there was something to drink and there would be food, fish or animals, you know, animals would come and feed a drink from the water. So part of our brain recognizes the incredible power of water, and we relax in its presence. And although that happened, you know, millennia back, it still happens to us, I think. So when we're near water, we just 100%. Feel a little bit, we just feel happier. So there's a very interesting about water, actually, is when sun falls on our skin, it produces serotonin. And serotonin is the hormone, and they call it the happy hormone. It's the hormone that makes us feel good. But when we're near water, the sunlight falls onto the water and reflects off it. So we get twice as much serotonin on our skin. So I think there's also a chemical reason why we often feel happy when we're near water. So that's a very long-winded answer. Always include a bit of water on your walk if you can. And it doesn't need to be a huge, beautiful lake or river. It can be any bit of water. Clean air is really important. There's nothing worse than walking along a motorway or a really busy road. Always avoid slow moving traffic just because of the pollution. And always use your Go Jauntly app and find a back route. Because if you're lucky enough to live somewhere like London, there's always a back route. And sometimes it's really not, it's maybe a few minutes longer, but the air is so much cleaner and it's so much better for your health. So clean air, and also the quiet of being off the big arterial roads.
It's the noise as well, isn't it? As I get older, I'm like, I want those earplugs in.
So avoid the big routes, always find back route. I quite often walk with a map, and I try not to use the Google Docs, because whenever we use a map, our brain has to keep working. So we're also having a cognitive workout. And in fact, there was a really interesting piece of research. It came out last week, and I think I put something on my Instagram about it, actually, which shows that people who use maps, and do not just follow that little Google red dot, people who use maps have much better cognition later in life. Mm-hmm. And these researchers are now talking about using map reading as an intervention for people with early dementia. So telling people very early cognitive impairment, just when the memory's starting to go, and you haven't got full-blown dementia, but you're just at that in-between stage, they're going to start experimenting and say, put away your phone and go out for half an hour every day and use a map and just see where it takes you, because it's such a powerful thing. Because when you get dementia, it starts in the same part of your brain as the part of your brain that is responsible for navigating. So it's all in the hippocampus, which is how we navigate, also how we remember.
So have you got any tips on new places to explore on foot?
I was just in Tel Aviv, which is not as big as London, but it's a city with quite a lot of traffic. But it is really brilliant for walking, because there's just so much to look at. All this Bauhaus architecture and little markets, and you could just sort of wander around. And there was always, if you kept your eyes open, there was always something new. And I was sort of walking around thinking, oh gosh, it's so interesting here, But actually London is just the same. In fact, nearly all big cities have so much to look at if you just, open your eyes. And also, look up. Don't just look down. Don't just look at the ground, your feet. But look up at some of the architectural details and, look up and see what's happening in the trees, as well as looking down. And I've got a favorite London walk, actually, which I think I'm going to do it tonight, because I normally try and do it when there's a full moon. And that runs right through the city of London from Mansion. Well, I thought you can go much further east than I start in Mansion House and go right through to Trafalgar Square. And that walk follows apparently a very old ley line, but it also follows a very old river. There used to be a river there. And it's also a funeral route of the past. So in the past, coffins would, it's about 8 or 9 churches on this route. And you can go further. I think you can get 10 churches. It's about 8 or 9 churches. So you walk from church to church to church. And I really like doing it on the full moon, because, in the evening, the city's very quiet, and with the all the full moonlight, the churches, and goes past St. Paul's as well. They all just look really beautiful, and they're sort of, because they're all white stone and they all shine. So that's one of my favorites for an evening walk. But also I'm a big fan of cemeteries.
Me too.
So I would often make an excursion. I look in my cemetery book and then, you know, take a bus to a cemetery and go and explore. Go and explore the cemetery. I once did a cemetery tour with a botanist, and he told me about all the different plants that you get in cemeteries, which he said are, you know, often very specific to cemeteries because they don't spray, so they don't use any pesticides. So there are a lot of wild things that have come in from all over the world, and a lot of them are edible. So we had a little foraging trip. So yes, I'm very partial to cemeteries, all sorts of cemeteries, you know, big ones, and often the small ones can be really quirky.
Yeah, that's also a good place to do a kind of meditative walk, I imagine, because you're kind of not expected to walk quickly around a cemetery, are you, really? I guess that doesn't happen much, but
they're also often very quiet.
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
Quite often they're deserted. I mean, during the pandemic, they suddenly became very, very full. But since then, of course, they've gone back to being to being deserted again.
I love that. Thank you so much. It's been a joy to chat to you.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed this episode as much as I have. We're running a book competition over on our Instagram @GoJauntly. Please check out our feed for more info on how to win a copy of Annabelle's books. This is a time-limited offer, and prize terms and conditions apply. You can use the Go Jauntly app to find curated walks based on your location. Simple photo guides help you navigate, while nifty tips point out things of interest, hidden gems, and places to eat. Walking challenges have been designed to help motivate you to walk more, from distance challenges to daily steps challenges. The choice is yours. You can download the app for free on the App Store or the Play Store. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Nature Bants. Don't forget to rate it and subscribe to the whole series. If you like what you've heard today, please do share this episode with your family and friends. Nature Bants was brought to you by Go Jauntly, a free, multi-award-winning walking, wayfinding, and nature connection app. To find out more, please visit gojauntly.com and discover a world of outdoor adventure on your doorstep and beyond.